You're in the right place. Oh, yeah. You are in the right zone. This is the Reaching Peak Show, and I'm Joseph F. Price. Good afternoon, everybody, and everybody, good afternoon. As always, we have an exciting show ahead of us. This show is power-packed with information to help you expand and develop your speaking business, as well as expand and develop your quality as a professional speaker. Today, I have with me a great interview I did with Mr. Richard Callahan of Richard Callahan Communication Services. Let me tell you a little bit about Richard. Richard Callahan has a unique combination of education and experience both in speech arts and in speech sciences. He's been a public speaking coach and teacher for over 30 years and a speech and voice therapist and coach for over 25 years. He offers individual coaching as well as public speaking workshops and seminars and complete courses, including public speaking for business leaders and public speaking for sales professionals. Mr. Richard Callahan has presented thousands of hours of communication-based workshops and seminars to various industries, including banks, utility companies, and healthcare organizations. His workshop topics include public speaking, frontline business etiquette, customer service, business writing, and leadership. Richard also coaches business and professional leaders as well as celebrities in the art of public speaking. Today, he's going to give us some very useful nuts and bolts to help us move the quality of our presentations from good to great. Richard is one of the people that we have attracted to help our members improve the quality of their professional speeches and presentations. And I must say, in this particular interview, it's not only information about speeches and presentations, but he also gives us some very insightful information about communications as a whole. In this interview, he shares with us secrets and techniques that not only help us become a better professional speaker, but also assist us in the job of becoming better communicators in general. So let's listen as Richard shares the basics of a good presentation. Now, Richard, I know you've developed a system of teaching public speaking called It was originally called Evoker. Now it's called Evokers. How did you develop it?
Well, that's an interesting story, Joseph. I've taught public speaking on the college level and to individually to CEOs of corporations and to upper management teams and corporations for over 30 years. And I've done evaluations of over 3,000 speeches. And after listening to and evaluating 3,000 speeches, ideas started to come to me that all these books on public speaking are wonderful. They're marvelous. They're just full of so much information. But my driving force in my professional life has always been to try to help people boil things down to the essence, to make things clear that are not clear, to show people the essence of what things are, and then they can find out all the other details on their own through all the other books on public speaking or communication that are out there. But after 30 years and 3,000 speeches, I realized what the essence of public speaking was, and so over years I would write down little notes to myself. This is important, that's important, this is important. And I ended up with a number of words that I thought were key in public speaking. And I started to play with them to develop an acronym so it would be easier for people to remember and retain and use the things that are the vital components of all successful public communication. And the word I came up with was evoker, and now it's evoker, evokers. Well, an evoker or evokers, evokers are people who draw forth responses from other people. And I thought, well, that's just what public speakers are supposed to do. They're supposed to be evokers. They're supposed to draw forth responses from their audience. And the responses they should draw forth from their audiences are responses of understanding, appreciation, excitement, compliance, persuasion, action, all of those things. If you are a good public speaker, your job is to draw forth a response from your audience. If it's a simple informative speech, the response you want is them to appreciate or understand the topic you're talking about. If it's a persuasive speech, your job is to get them to comply or change the way they think, or in the most difficult form of public speaking, a speech of actuation or persuasion, where they actually get up there and do something, go, leave where they're living and go out of their homes and actually do something based upon your speech. So I thought, well, evoker, that's it. That's what public speakers are. They're evokers. So as you said, it started out as evoker, and the acronym stands for enthusiasm for the E, volume, voice and variety for the V, organization for the O, knowledge for the K, eye contact for the E, R for rehearsal, and then I always try to adjust my work. You know, we can't let our work sit. We have to go back and reevaluate our work because life changes, the world changes, and we see different things, and we have to just keep on adjusting. And I realized, here I am, a certified speech, language, and voice pathologist, and I left off speech, off my acronym. And speech production is so important that if I can't understand the words you're saying, your message is gone. Doesn't matter how loud you are, how enthusiastic you are, if I can't understand you, you might as well not have gotten up to speak. So I said, I've got to add the S to my evoker's acronym and talk to people about the way they talk.
Now, did you want to run through E-V-O-K-E-R-S in what they mean and just give us a little word on each one? Enthusiasm?
Yeah. The first E is enthusiasm. You know, as you know, Joseph, as a speaker, if you don't show enthusiasm and interest and excitement in the topic, you sure can't expect your audience to show interest or excitement or enthusiasm. So it's up to us as speakers to be enthusiastic and interested and excited in the topic, because enthusiasm is contagious. But so is boredom, and so is disinterest. So our jobs as communicators, as public speakers, is to have our enthusiasm be contagious and have the audience catch it. It has to be genuine and personal, though. There's nothing worse, I think, than somebody who's over-enthusiastic, who gushes, who we know is fake. The enthusiasm has to be personal and genuine to be believable. You can't adopt somebody else's style of enthusiasm because we think it'll play better than our own. It won't. I was just in Orlando over the weekend doing coaching and public speaking for a large pharmaceutical company, and as I was helping these people with their speeches, the thing I had to keep on telling them was, don't copy my style of enthusiasm. Don't copy somebody else's style of enthusiasm. When I work, I'm very animated. It's hard to pin me down. I get into my subject, and my voice and my face and my body shows my enthusiasm. But I'll tell you, I know some of the most effective public speakers who never move a muscle. They stand behind the podium, their faces are animated, and their voices are animated, but they don't move around or gesture at all, but yet they're riveting. Because some people show their enthusiasm through their eye contact, through their facial expressions that just hold us captive. So I told these people they had to find what their enthusiasm was. How did they communicate enthusiasm in their own lives? And that's what they had to develop. And most people, you know, aren't even aware of what their enthusiasm style is. They just do it. Well, as speakers, we have to evaluate everything we do. What works, what doesn't work. And once these folks started to realize I can find my own enthusiasm and use that, they were much more relaxed and much more effective. So that's a real big E, is finding your personal style of enthusiasm and developing it, not just finding it, but developing it and making it stronger and making it more effective when you speak. The V is for volume, voice, and variety. And volume, if the audience can't hear us, our message is gone. So volume is so important, but so many speakers don't pay attention to it. On this engagement I had this weekend in Orlando, they had me mic'd with a lavalier mic on my shirt collar for the room. They had me mic'd for the audiovisual people who were making a videotape of this presentation, and they had a microphone on the podium. So So there were three mics. I got up to give my speech. I gave a 15-minute speech on best practices in public speaking. I started talking to the audience, and the first thing I said was, can you hear me in the back of the room? And they said, no. Now, I had three microphones on. None of them were turned on. If they were turned on, the volume wasn't turned up. So right off the bat, I had to move away from the podium, increase my volume so the folks in the back of the room could hear me, until the AV people worked out the microphone situation. Once they did, I was fine. But if I hadn't checked with the audience at the beginning, they would have lost the first 3 or 4 minutes of my speech. I don't want my audience to lose any of my speech, especially the first 3 or 4 minutes, which I design to capture and hold their attention. So volume is key. And many speakers just start to talk, and there are people in the back of the room, and they're pointing at their ears, they're shaking their head, and speakers don't adjust. So volume is incredible, and it's key. So enthusiasm and volume, to me, and my evokers, I think they're all important. They all are important. But enthusiasm and volume, golly, you have to have those right off the bat. Voice is, your voice quality has to be pleasing, has to fit your body type. It's got to be as full and round and expressive as your voice can be. Because if your voice, and I'll do a couple of short impressions here for you, Joseph, if your voice is nasal, which is when your voice comes through your nose like this and you can kind of nasally, this is not a voice quality that's especially endearing to an audience. They find it annoying. Even on Saturday Night Live, they used to do a skit called The Whiners. And The Whiners, the whole thing was a play on people with nasal voices. Those are not pleasing voices. Harsh voices. A harsh voice is a kind of a voice like this. Now, who wants to listen to Callahan talk for 15 minutes if his voice sounds like this? A breathy voice is a voice where there's too much air being aspirated during the speech. So a breathy voice has too much air coming out, and it kind of sounds like I'm out of breath. Now, do you want to listen to me give a speech for 15 minutes with a voice like this? Or a tense voice, or a thin voice, or a throaty voice like Kermit the Frog or Barney Fife? This kind of voice is also can be kind of distracting. Or a flat, monotone kind of a voice where I'd say, hi, my name is Richard. It's wonderful to see all of you. Thank you. Isn't this exciting time we're living in? Well, did you want to listen to 15 minutes of me talking like this? No. So our voice quality has to be professional. There's no way around it. Otherwise, people are not going to pay attention to it. So it's got to be pleasing. It has to have a smooth quality to it. It's got to sound good and be a kind of voice that people will have no problem listening to, not only for 15 minutes, but if you get some good gigs, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours at a time, anybody's voice can kind of get to you after a while. So your voice has to be flexible, has to be pleasing, full, round, expressive. And finally, the last V is variety, which means our pitch, our rate, our volume, and our melody patterns have to be expressive. We have to reflect the content of our message and the emotional aspect of our message, because without variety, any message can get monotonous. My example there would be politicians. Many politicians give speeches in a voice that seems to be very official, but it's all very flat and very monotone. And if you listen to the voices on the campaign trail now of McCain and Clinton and Obama, they all have very, very expressive voices because they know how to use a vocal variety. We can use people like them, people like Martin Luther King, people like John Kennedy, as examples of people with expressive voices. Bill Clinton had a very expressive voice as well. The good politicians are the ones who know how to use their voices in a variety of settings, and they know how to vary their voices. O is organization. As we know, if we're giving a speech, people get to hear us once. They get to hear our message once. If they only hear us once, they'll have to pay attention and keep paying attention, be motivated by our topic, be able to follow the progression of our ideas, be motivated by the use of appeals, and be helped by our use of audiovisual aids. So our speeches have to be so well organized that the audience can follow us, understand us, pay attention, keep paying attention, even though they only hear us once, which is so vital. Once the words are out there, they're in the air, in the ether, they're gone. So we have to be so well organized, they can't lose us. And we know, Joseph, as professional speakers, that audiences can't pay attention for long stretches of time. They're going to drift in and out. what do? You keep doing internal summaries of your main points. So when they come back from wherever they drift out to, you're already summarizing maybe what they've missed, so they can get right back on board with you and keep going. Also, that speeches should never be memorized. Speeches should never be read. They should only be delivered from a carefully crafted outline. That's called extemporaneous speech. People who read speeches, they're asking for trouble because they have no eye contact with the audience and their voice sounds artificial. People who memorize speeches are asking for trouble because they'll forget their speech. It's got to be done from an outline.
Would you say that from your experience and your knowledge, do the well-known political leaders, without mentioning any names, on their teleprompter, is that the whole speech or is that talking point?
When a president gives a speech, the whole speech is on the teleprompter because every word's been carefully parsed and it has to be delivered as it was written. Because it, obviously, as the president, every word that you say is going to be interpreted around the world. Candidates may have some sentences written out because they don't want to have any of the words misinterpreted or mistaken. But usually they have talking points because they're so well-schooled in public speaking, they're so experienced in public speaking, they just need those bullet points to remind them of what the point is they wanted to make. But the more important the point, especially for politicians, the more important it is to have those words or phrases or sentences written out so they can read them verbatim. But mostly they work off talking points.
Okay.
The K is knowledge, and the knowledge has to be of subject and of audience and of the occasion. You have to have knowledge of your subject. You have to have more knowledge of your subject than you can ever, ever tell your audience. No matter how long you have to talk to them, you always have to have more knowledge than you can ever say. You have to have deep wells of knowledge to draw from. We need to know so much more about our subject than we can ever possibly tell in the time we have to speak, because what this does is it gives us confidence. Joseph, there's so much stuff that I have to tell you about public speaking, I wouldn't have the time to do it. And if I know that, it gives me confidence in a 15-minute or 3-hour speech because I know I've got such deep wells behind me. Because of my background in acting, I was taught very early on, when you go on stage, you're not just saying the words from a script. You have to do a full biography of your character. Where your character went to high school, who his first girlfriend was, what his parents' names are, did he go to school, what kind of car did he drive? And as a beginning actor, I thought, well, this is nonsense. Why do I have to know all this stuff? And I didn't. I just memorized lines. And the director said, Richard, this is just not good. You're just spouting lines. You didn't do your biography, did you? And I said, no, how could you tell? He said, well, because you're flat. Because all you're delivering here is words. If you have a fully developed biography of your character that the audience will never, ever know about, only you will know about it. When you walk on stage, you're more likely to become that character and more convincing because you have deep wells behind you of knowing who this character is. He's not just ticks on a page. He's a living, breathing human being with a past. And it will make your delivery of the lines that much more effective. And I thought, well, you know, that's the same thing true with public speaking. I have to know more about my topic than I can ever tell my audience, which will make me more credible, more believable to the audience, and give me much more self-confidence when I'm standing in front of the group. Knowledge of the audience is knowing which demographic factors, like age, gender, education, occupation, economic level, group membership, cultural background, ethnic background, I have to know which one of those things will affect my audience's ability to accept and understand my message. I don't have to use all of them, but I have to know that their age or their gender or their education or their group membership or their ethnic background may affect their ability or willingness to accept my message. So if I analyze my audience and I get the information from the people who are working in the group or the people who hire me, who are these people? What's their age level? What's their education? I can tailor my message to them much more effectively than if I just walk in cold and I don't know who the heck I'm talking to. Same thing is true of occasion. What's the occasion? Is it formal? Informal? Is it an ongoing meeting? Is it unique? Is it secular? Is it religious? Where will it be held? Why are they meeting? What do they want from me? I have to analyze the occasion as well. So if I know my subject, I know my audience, I know my occasion, then my knowledge is going to help me be more effective as a speaker.
And then you talk a lot about eye contact. That's a pet peeve for you. So here you are.
Eye contact. I hammer that in my speeches and my training and my public speaking courses. You have to look them in the eye. If it's an audience of 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 50, you have to look each individual in the eye. You have to work that room from the left-hand corner to the right-hand corner. You cannot neglect anybody in the audience. If you're dealing with a large audience of hundreds of people, then you have to look at every section of the audience, because if you're working with an audience of hundreds, it's obviously an auditorium where you can't see their faces, especially if there are spotlights shining on you. So you have to look at each section of the audience continually. In smaller groups or well-lit rooms, everybody wants to have eye contact with you. They want to meet your eyes. It's going to show that you are somebody they can trust, somebody who knows what they're talking about, someone who's believable. Eye contact, eye contact, eye contact. We have to do it as much as we can consistently. It bonds us with our audience. It enhances our credibility. It holds the audience's attention. And it gives you the feedback from these people to let you know how you're doing. And my rule of thumb is, as I told you, if they're looking at me and they're not squirming, I'm doing a good job.
Now, I just had one thing to add with eye contact, because I know it's gonna cause you to churn a little bit. What about this fake eye contact stuff, looking at people in their forehead and all that nonsense? I know you have something to say about that, so go ahead.
You either look people in the eye or you don't. Looking above them, looking at their forehead, it's nonsense. When people do that to me, I start waving my hands in front of my face. I wave my hands in front of my face and I say, hello, I'm down here. Forehead looking is distracting. Forehead looking is fake. You have to look folks in the eyes, especially in public speaking. You're not holding their eyes very long. You know, we have a whole thing in interpersonal communication about the acceptable length of eye contact time that one human being makes with another before people start to get creeped out. But in giving a speech, your eye contact is so brief that you have to meet eye, and move around the room. Looking at foreheads, people know that they're not being looked at. They know their foreheads are being looked at, and they kind of get a weird feeling. Don't do it.
I knew that would be a perfect question, because I know sometimes when you talk about eye contact, people kind of get the concept, and then all of a sudden they say, well, I don't really want to do that. So then they figure out ways to fake it, and then what you've done is you're probably worse off if you fake something than if you don't do it at all.
Absolutely. You know, if you look at the back wall of the auditorium, the room you're working, or if you look at the floor, it's not good. But some people are going to say, this person's shy or nervous, and that's why he or she is not looking at us. The fake forehead look makes people feel uneasy. It doesn't make you look more credible or more believable. It makes people kind of look at you sideways. So if you have to not look the audience in the eye, look down at the floor.
Now, you talk a lot about rehearsal. What do you mean by rehearsal? You talk about rehearsal without memorizing everything that you're going to say.
When you are preparing a speech, you have to have a working outline. And the working outline is your introduction, your body with the main points and the supporting details, and the conclusion. This outline should never be written out word for word. It should not be sentences or paragraphs. It should only be individual words or phrases. And that's the outline you work from. Rehearsal is so important because it gives you a chance to feel the words. You have to rehearse out loud. Rehearsing a speech in your mind, that's more like visual imagery, you know? If you want to use visual imagery, imagine yourself in front of the group. Imagine yourself talking to the group. But rehearsal has to be done standing up and has to be done out loud. Why standing up? Because that's how people speak, standing up. People speak differently when they're sitting down than they do when they're standing up. When they stand up, they have more diaphragmatic breathing and more power and more supportive tone. So if you're going to give a speech standing up, why not rehearse the speech standing up? Rehearsal also, as I said, lets you feel the words in your mouth, because many times we're not used to saying certain words or phrases or combinations of words, so we have to say them out loud, until we get comfortable saying those words out loud. Using our notes gets us used to looking down, seeing what the words are, and then looking back up at the audience and then talking to the audience. That's the key to extemporaneous speaking, is looking down at your notes. The notes remind you of what you want to say. You look back at your audience, and it sounds like you're making up the sentences on the spot. And in essence, you really are, because you don't have the sentences written out. Every time you say them, they'll be a little bit different. They'll have a little bit more spontaneity to them. So the effect we want as a public speaker is the audience thinks we sound conversational. We sound relaxed. We sound spontaneous. We sound like we're just talking to them like friends would talk. Obviously, this is not true. Conversations are horrible. Conversations are convoluted, messy affairs full of hesitations and backtracks and ums and errs and half-said sentences and interruptions. But the audience wants to have the impression of conversationality, which is somebody who's relaxed and confident in what they're saying. You can't do that, Joseph, I don't think, without rehearsal. I've been doing this for 30-something years, and I still rehearse my speeches out loud, standing up with my working outline in my hand. So when I go and give the speech, I'm standing up, I have my outline in my hand, just like I did for rehearsal, except now I have my audience in front of me. And it's much more relaxed and more comfortable because I've already rehearsed this just the way I'm presenting it to the audience now. For myself, I rehearse the speech a minimum of 5 times. And if I have to give a speech next week, I get the outline together, and the next few days, I would practice that speech at least 5 times. Then what I would do is let a day go by and practice the speech the following day. Then I would let a day go by and practice the speech the following day. Then as I'm getting closer to the event, I'd practice the speech probably once or twice a day. So in total, even for somebody like me who's been doing this forever, I'm so driven that my presentation will be the best presentation that I can give, that I've got to practice this puppy a lot. So probably when it's all done, I've practiced the speech maybe 10 times out loud, maybe 12 times in total. But the first time after I get the notes done, I practice 5 times right there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I make the changes on my notes because words don't come out right. The phrasing's not right. Something's not right. My outline's not right. So I do it 5 times to give myself a chance to correct my outline. Then I'll just let it sit there for a day and then try it again. Now, is it memorized by the time I've done it 12 times? Well, I wouldn't call it memorized, but I'm certainly familiar with this speech. I certainly know it backwards and forwards, but I still wouldn't want to go out there and try to give it without notes. I'll still always use my working outline. I'll still follow what I've designed for myself.
Now, that's you. And yes, that's what it's going to take to do an excellent presentation at the caliber that would be acceptable for Richard Callahan Communications.
That's correct.
What would you tell somebody if they just wanted to get by? Now, we're making the distinction. Excellence is what you just described, and that's what a aspiring speaker who wants to have excellence should do. But what about the guy who doesn't want to do that, who just wants to get by? What would you tell him? And the reason I say this is because, for me, I can understand 12 times. You do whatever you need to do to reach a point of excellence. But some people don't have the time where they can do it 12 times, and 12 times will scare them.
Yeah, you're right. For the person who just wants to do a good job, who's not a professional speaker but does not want to embarrass him or herself, I'd say you have to practice the speech 5 times.
Okay. All right. That's actually what I wanted to leave them with, so that they have a medium idea, so that they know that and you and I are pretty much in agreement. If you do it less than 5 times, you're just throwing things at things, right? Would you sum that up? Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would, entirely.
Okay.
Entirely. You can do all this work, and then if you don't rehearse it, it's almost like you've done the work for nothing, because when you finally do the presentation, it's not going to have the effect you want, because you're not comfortable enough saying the words and having the organization flow like it should.
And then the final letter in Evokers is S, which stands for speech production. Talk about that one.
Yeah. As speakers, we have to have clear speech and fluent speech that's free from mispronunciations. It gets me as a professional speaker, but it would get anybody if a word is mispronounced, and sometimes they get mispronounced so badly that we can't recognize what the word is supposed to be. Mispronunciations have to go for anybody giving a speech. Misarticulations. We can't pronounce the L sound, the R sound, the S sound. Those need to be addressed, because those can be distracting. The key here, of course, Joseph, is that our speech should never be the focus of the attention of the audience. The message has to be the center of attention. So if anything distracts from the message, it's got to go. It's got to get changed or improved. Now, misarticulations, sometimes for adults, are not easy to correct. And if you want to be a professional speaker, you have to correct them. If you're somebody who wants to learn public speaking because they have a speech to give in a couple of weeks and they may never do it again, then there are ways we can temper speech problems to make them less pronounced, which is what we want to do. And normal disfluencies are the ums and the ahs and the hitches and the halts that everybody has in their speaking. Those things are acceptable. They're normal. We expect people not to be completely fluent. Everybody's allowed an or a mistake now and then, even as a professional speaker. But if disfluencies get above that, a disfluency would be anything that would break up the rhythm of the speech, like almost like a stuttering. Those are disfluencies that can be distracting. Our speech should never be the focus of the audience's attention. So, as I said, I've been very fortunate by being a speech and voice pathologist that I can help my clients who have those kinds of distracting speech or voice patterns to help correct them and smooth them out before they have to give a speech.
Well, let me jump in there and let me use this. Actually, here's the reality for me. I actually drove a cab on the midnight shift for about 10 years ago. And so I really embraced the street, and I picked up a lot of speaking patterns from the street. It was a survival mechanism at the time. Some of those things have been very difficult for me to get rid of. I do know that some people, they didn't have the experience of adopting a street language. That's all they knew. So you're speaking to me, and you're also speaking to people that have a whole bunch of nomenclature all in their conversation. What is it that you want to tell us? Because it is distraction, and what kind of things can we do to help get rid of some of those things that are distracting?
Awareness is the first thing, Joseph. If we find out that there are things that we're doing that are distracting, we know exactly what they are. There's a number of choices we have. If there are things that can be handled easily, we can just go on the web and Google whatever the problem is, you know, whatever it is, and find some techniques there to help us. If there are more serious issues, then we need to talk to a coach or a speech pathologist or a voice coach or a voice therapist. I had a guy call me yesterday, and I thought the guy was using an artificial voice, but it wasn't consistent. And he wanted to get me to do some teaching for him, and I thought he wanted public speaking training. And I just couldn't understand exactly why he was calling me. And the funny came down to the fact that he's a disc jockey, and his voice was horrible. I told him that what he had to do was find either a voice coach or a voice therapist in the area where he was calling me from, or hire me. But for him, there was no quick fix. This was a man who wanted to make a living as a disc jockey, and his voice just was not up to the job. But for other people who find they have little hesitations or hitches or halts in their speech or their background, this is the only way they know how to talk, those folks can find some help either on the web or through a professional.
And what would you recommend to us who, I mean, I try to really minimize it as best as I can, and then I try to use it as a vehicle to humanize and bring myself down to earth. But there are people that I've listened to that it is at a much greater level than me, and it is annoying. So what is it that you have to say, like, in what in a word should we do? Get rid of it?
Yes. We have to get rid of anything that's distracting from our message. Has to be minimized. The ideal, of course, is to get rid of anything that's going to cause a distraction for your audience, but sometimes that's not possible. So it's okay to minimize those kinds of things. So there's a very well-known national news person who I can't listen to because he's got some problems with his voice and with his speech. So I sent him an email and I said, I can't listen to you anymore. I have to put the closed captioning on, but I think you're an excellent reporter, but I just cannot listen to that voice. And I told him what I thought about his voice quality and what I thought about his articulation, the way he articulates a certain sound. And within a week, he had fixed his voice problem. Because the voice problem was not difficult to fix at all, but he just was not aware of it, or the people around him were not aware of it, or weren't going to be the ones to stand up and say to him, you know, your voice sounds terrible. And he took that, and he got his voice help right away. The articulation he's working on, I can tell, because it's minimizing. And so if his voice is good, and I can hear his voice clearly, and it's not distracting, and his speech problem is getting smaller, I can now listen to him without putting the closed captioning on, and not get distracted by his voice and speech. But somebody like me, I'm probably the worst audience for people like that because that's my background and my training, so my radar is really turned up. He took the advice, and he fixed his voice, and he's working on his speech, and I thought that was a marvelous response for a professional to have, which is to realize this stuff has to go.
Yes, and he definitely was committed to his craft. Now, if you want to sum up on Evokers again.
Evokers is a system I developed to help speakers identify and remember the vital components of all successful public communication. And Evokers stands for enthusiasm, voice, volume, variety, organization, knowledge of subject, audience and occasion, eye contact, rehearsal, speech production. They're all important to me, Joseph. I think that these are the vital components of all public communication. If I had to, though, the ones that always stand out for me are eye contact, enthusiasm, and volume. Those are the leaders in the Evokers system, I think. As important as the other ones are, you have to be heard, you have to look at the audience, and you have to have enthusiasm for your subject.
Now, tell me what you do at Richard Callahan Communication Services again.
I work with individuals, and I also work with companies and corporations. I do individual coaching for voice, for speech, for public speaking, and for people who want personal attention with their communication skills. I go to corporations and companies, and I give workshops and seminars on topics like customer service, verbal, nonverbal communication, business etiquette. I do management-employee communication, understanding management styles. I do listening skills and perception, resolution of differences, and using power in communication.
Okay, and how would our listeners get in contact with you?
My website is richardcallahan.com, and my email is richard@richardcallahan.com.
Okay. I always ask that signature question before we go. What one thing do you want to leave with us today?
Look them in the eye. Keep looking at the audience in the eye. Work on eye contact. Eye contact is your friend. Eye contact is your key to success.
Okay. Now I'm going to do something risky here, and I think maybe somebody listening can benefit from us. I'm putting myself out on the line. So if you can pick me up, beat me up on one thing about what it is, how I talk, and tell me what I can do about it. That's pretty bold on my part.
Well, you know, yeah, it's a bold question. I don't I'm afraid I don't have a good answer for you. I have no criticism of your voice or speech, Joseph, so I got nothing for you. You know, this happened when I was up in Orlando this weekend, and it's a natural thing. These people I was working with, I gave my keynote speech, and I did my best to kind of tell people, I'm going to come listen to you and do an evaluation of you doing some public presentations, but my job is to help you. And my latitude of acceptance is wide. I want everybody to be as individual as they can. I just don't want them to go beyond the borders of acceptable speech or voice quality or ability to organize and talk. But yet when I came into these rooms, these people, they got all nervous and they said, you know, we were fine until you walked in the room and now we feel like we're intimidated. And I thought, No, that's not it. And your voice and your speech are wonderful. I have no problem with them because I'm just looking for things so outside the boundaries that I really believe that everybody should be encouraged to use their own voice pattern, their own rhythm patterns. That's what makes people individual and unique. So I had people saying to me, well, you won't like me because I have a Southern accent. I love Southern accents. As long as I can understand you, I love every accent, whether it's from New England or Chicago, from the South. I think that's marvelous. I work with people with foreign accents, and I say, I will not make you sound like you're an American. I will make your speech sound understandable and clear. And that's all I'm going to do for you. Don't make me try to make you sound American. So my answer to you is, you have a very unique style, Joseph. Your voice and your speech are unique because they're you. There is nothing that I would want to change. I would love to hear you deliver a speech, as a matter of fact, because there's so little of you that I get to hear. You know, you say a few things and then you ask me a question, but I haven't heard you talk at length, and I think that would be interesting, and I'd love to hear that. So it was a bold question, but I have no bold answer for you.
Well, the reason I ask the question is, number one, feedback is the breakfast of champions. And then number two, I've always had that intimidating experience whenever we talk on the phone. So I was, you know, just chomping at the bit forever to ask you that question. And I said, well, why not ask it this way? And then if it was something that you would just give me a little this or that, then it would give people an opportunity to see you in action. But thank you very much for endorsing the quality of what I do. I appreciate it, and I think it's so much that because of your professionalism, you understand that, and you're recognizing that just because there's a few perfections, that's part of me, and to doctor things too much is for me not to be authentic. And so what you're telling me, without telling me, is stay where you are, because where you are is where you need to be. And if you try to make some dramatic changes, you'll be totally inauthentic as well as ineffectual.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Whatever you have is you're in a groove that your voice projects your personality and the way you phrase things and the way your melody pattern runs. It's uniquely you, and it's pleasing, and it's readily identifiable. So, as I said, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
How about that? So, again, in case you folks have just joined us, I'm sure you didn't join us. I have with me today Mr. Richard Callahan of Richard Callahan Communications. What's your website again, Richard?
RichardCallahan.com.
Okay. What do you do again? I know what you do, but what do you do again?
I do individual coaching for public speaking as well as voice and speech, and I do corporate and company training in all aspects of communication, including business etiquette, customer service, verbal skills, nonverbal skills, listening skills, understanding perceptions, getting along with people, management, employee communication.
Listen, Richard, we greatly appreciate you stopping by Reaching Speakers to help out our speakers. I can't thank you more than enough. It's very appreciative. Anybody who is listening that needs coaching, they can reach Mr. Callahan at, what's that website again?
RichardCallahan.com.
Okay. And again, I hope that you're going to come and join us again, aren't you, Richard?
I'd love to.
Okay. Well, we appreciate it, sir. Once again, thank you so much for stopping by, and we'll talk to you real soon here.
Thank you, Joseph.
Okay.